Oh, good morning, everyone. I can't remember ever seeing so many people show up for a Zazen Kai before, like maybe ever here. And this morning someone, Jacqueline, said she thought it was the Trump effect, which certainly resonated. And, you know, if only it was just Trump. This could only be happening. There wasn't a lot of stuff with very long, deep roots, of which he's our nightmare manifestation. Continuously emerging, you know, and I just briefly looked at the news this morning. I just feel like I should somehow be able to give, you know, some profound talk about what is happening, because there's just so much reason to be really beyond disturbed, but alarmed. And but I'm afraid I would just probably end up ranting somewhat incoherently. So I'm gonna stay with the talk I had kind of prepared a couple of days ago. Which hopefully maybe there will be something that connects in there. So besides just the size, it just feels so good to be back here sitting with the group in the city. Sitting here, whether it's a Zazen Kai or a quiet Wednesday evening sit with seven people, always feels in a way like returning home and just finding the ground again under my feet. And I do just want to say really at the outset, welcome. There's a lot of people here who, if not new or new to me, hard to know anymore. So really welcome everyone. So those of you who have been around are aware we've been looking at a study text called Dotoku, written by Dogen, and that we're at the beginning of an intensive 3 months ango period, or intensified practice period. And recently there were a number of talks at the retreats addressing, looking at Dotoku. And this week when I was looking through it again, which, you know, I somehow had read it before, but it didn't really take me in the same way. But what kind of caught me by surprise was just the last few sentences. And he says, thus, good friends of expression have a way to visit unexpectedly. Friends beyond expression have a place to be acquainted without expectation, whereas the practice of getting acquainted, expression, is actualized. And so, he said this, I guess, in response after he writes about a very personal encounter between a hermit monk who's been off living and practicing, we're told, unshaved or unordained by himself in the mountains. And the story is between him and this, I guess, very important Zen teacher at the time, Zui Feng, who led one of the largest monasteries of the time. And so he was the abbot in the nearby monastery. And Ryotan Sensei just gave a really wonderful interpretation of this interchange just last week in his Dharma talk. And he kind of really broke it down line by line, which I'm not going to do now, but I do recommend everybody to listen to his talk and to all the other teachers' talks if you haven't. But to give the gist of the encounter between these two, for those of you who haven't read it or heard any of this, so a meeting takes place between these two after one of Zui Feng's attendants comes upon this hermit while he's walking through the mountains. And he finds the hermit scooping up drinking water, water to drink, that he scoops up with a wooden scooper, we're told, that he himself made. And that this, you know, he's been seen doing this as a daily ritual or practice. And the attendant, seeing him doing this, I guess has been struck by the manner or the energy in which this has been taking place. So he decides to kind of encounter him. And so he asks him, what is the meaning of Bodhidharma's coming from India? Which in a way is kind of code for saying, you know, what is the meaning of Zen? On a base level. And this hermit replies to him, the valley is deep, the dipper handle is long. Which just on its own merit, without any associations with Zen, is quite a little profound statement to me. But Ryotan, in his talk, just threw this bit of information that also the valley stream is often can be interpreted as the Dharma. And, you know, that just gave it an even slightly deeper dimension. Although actually it's the same dimension, so not really. So essentially we get that he's got a very deep practice going by himself off in the mountains. So when the attendant comes back to Zui Feng and he reports what he said, he is also actually struck by it, and he decides to go off and meet him to check him out. So it may have been to kind of test him, but I also just like to think he thought that this was very intriguing, and he was just curious to meet this unusual practitioner of the way. And I think that it was kind of probably unusual that the abbot of a monastery would just take off, and I'm sure it wasn't like a short walk to go check him out. I mean, it was probably quite a venture to go do this. So that's saying something about him. He's not just discounting him as irrelevant. So upon meeting him, he goes and he finds the hermit and he meets him and he says, "If you have expression, I will not shave your head." So upon hearing these words, we're told the hermit goes and he returns to Zui Feng with his head freshly washed, offering himself to be shaved. What I left out is Wei Feng returned with his attendant who was carrying a razor. You know, back in those days, everybody in a monastery was ordained, and if you ordained, you shaved your head. And so, but I think what so touched me here is the value that Dogen is really placing on relationship, because honestly, he can just sometimes feel, even though when you get underneath it, it's not, but it just can feel very intellectual and very philosophical and just not so emotional. And I just, there's something very, to me, you know, there's really something emotional here. It's relationship. And there's something that's very tender and intimate happening between the two of them, actually very vulnerable. And that this is how Dogen ends this piece and highlights it. I don't know, just really changed, gave me a different appreciation for him. Where there is the practice of getting acquainted, expression is actualized. You know, so it's not the hermit's words that he points to in this, and it's not the abbot's words or his station that he points to. It's sort of what happens between the two of them. You know, in a way, they both leave their respective identities, their comfort zones, to meet each other. Without expectation, because really neither one of them has any idea how the other one is going to respond. You know, the abbot coming, this hermit easily could have just told him to just go to hell. You know, I'm fine. You know, what are you doing here? You know, take your razor and leave. My scoop is full. But he didn't say that. And the hermit washes his head. And comes to him. And, you know, we can imagine that he had a lot of ambivalence. Probably about doing that. And he might have even had a lot of antipathy towards this kind of more formal practice that, or certainly resistance that, you know, the abbot would have embodied or represented. But he offers himself, he meets him. So there's a way in which they each really saw and heard the other as individuals, not as their ideas of what the other person would be. You know, there was probably something in the way Zui Fang spoke to him that allowed him to open up. And there was something probably about the way the hermit came to him that prompted Zui Fang to speak to him in such a way. You know, I mean, he kind of was asking him, like, well, if you already have your expression, if you already have your understanding or way, if your cup is already full, there's no need for me and I'll just leave. I won't shave you, you know. And he just, you know, really humbled himself and asked him, you know. And so, you know, there's something in this dynamic about in there, each of them really allowing themselves to be seen in a vulnerable, very real way. And to use the power of listening, I think, to really listen to the other, they became acquainted. And so with this acquaintance is connection, relationship, which in a way is the heart of what we're all doing. Because as Dogen says, it is really through relationship that expression has meaning, that it's actualized. So, you know, times have changed, but it seems human nature doesn't. And we can be just as hesitant and fearful, most of us, to show our real selves as they were then. We can drape and cover ourselves with illusions of authority or knowledge or whatever it may look like. And we can just as easily hide between maybe more invisible drapes of resistance and distance. In the Dhammapada, Buddha speaks of how important it is for those on the path to be in good company and to spend some time, significant time, with people that we can trust. And, you know, in this way, the Sangha is considered the most important, really, of the three treasures. And, you know, this is not to say that it's recommended or healthy even to limit oneself to only being with Sangha. But it's kind of really impossible to fully maintain and to maintain and develop in this practice without fellow travelers on the way, without Sangha. Because, you know, I think we all know this isn't really news, that it's through our relations with other people that we continuously discover ourselves freshly. Find our edges that we didn't even know we had, where we get irritated, impatient, pissed off, scared, resentful, what have you. Just where and how we can find ourselves in wanting to protect who we believe we are, or maybe it's who we would like to be, or maybe it's who we think we should be. I unfortunately missed it, but I did listen online, and I remember a line in Norman Fisher's talk having to do with the importance of friendship when he was alluding to, and basically he was saying friendship is the main thing. Friendship is the thing that we're doing. You know, but we can have our ideas about friendship, you know. We can have some pretty narrow ideas. And it was interesting that was he alluding to this. He said that how we will inevitably end up sitting next to the person who drives us the most crazy, and that we will probably do that for possibly 30 years. And yet, just how valuable that is. You know, because it really is only when we see how and where we ourselves separate and cut off, actually shut down, if you will, that we can tend to those places and allow them to heal. And we, if we just surround ourselves with things we think we like, or just ourselves, takes a lot longer to find them. They're still there, but it's really impossible to see the full dimensionality of how they operate. So, you know, sometimes just, you know, kind of the light of an awareness can be enough for a shift to happen. But probably most times, at least for myself, it's really only been through engagement with others that the awareness is even possible. So here at the Zendo and in our relations at the Zendo, we have the time, years, actually, or could be 15 minutes, but also the space and the safety to really explore what's happening inside ourselves first, and then if it's necessary, and sometimes it's not, with the other person or possibly with the group. And, you know, this is possible and true in a way that's very different than at a job or school, or even with family or different kinds of friends, where the mandate of the relationship is very different. And, you know, they may not just give a shit, honestly, you know, and may not just not want to hear about it and not want to deal with it. But at the Zendo, for everybody who comes here, this is exactly what we're here for. And to be here in that way for other people. I remember this sort of came home to me in a little chip of a way many years ago, probably. God, I don't know, many years ago, at least 15 years ago. And there was this woman who was the shuso at the time. And I remember Roshi was sick at that time. She had broken her ankle, so she needed to be in her hut a lot. And anyway, what one of these students, one of the other students was just having a really hard time at that time. And, you know, you would come down if you had to go to the bathroom or something in the middle of the night, and you could find her just sort of wandering around the Zendo doing like interpretive dance things, just having these experiences by herself in the Zendo, you know. And it was like, oh, is she okay? Should we say, you know, should we say something? Will other people get freaked out by this, you know? And anyway, so I remember her saying, it's just really important that we give each other the space to get a little strange sometimes. We all get that way. And I don't know, you know, I was incredibly, it really shifted something in me, and I just thought it was a very beautiful expression of what we try to do here. But so the Zendo, as really a container for this quiet, regular, steadfast sitting with others, breeds a quality of intimacy between people that is really, really unique. It's just not like anything you will find in any other context of relationship. You know, everybody really goes to a very deep internal place together. And in this endeavor, really, a softening and a connection occurs even when we're not aware of it. But we sense it. And the more we go to those very tender, deep places with others in silence, not always, but often. And what I'm talking about here is in silence. The closer we can feel in a nonverbal but very, very real way. And, you know, we just sense others going on similarly deep inner attorneys. And this feeling of profound connection and softening really can't be overstated. You can't explain it, but it's palpable. We may not know what the other person does for a living, but we know their footsteps, we know their breath, we know the way their robes move, we know their rhythms. Incredibly intimate. And, you know, in a way, this is just an aside, but it is one of the things that can be very useful about robes and places to sit, because there's a whole layer that's taken away, and we can actually get to know each other beneath appearances in a way that's different than how we usually present ourselves or look at each other. So that said, you know, in the silence is often harmony, which, as Joshin mentioned in her talk, once we start talking and working together, can quickly shift into a whole different story. And, you know, this is in a sense where the rubber hits the road. How we deal with each other through that. You know, over my many years here, I can say that really probably every single one of my buttons has been pushed repeatedly. Doesn't end. And really, you know, over time, you know, interestingly, there really isn't anyone who falls out of this. You know, you spend time with people, they're going to push your buttons. In a way that they don't when you just pop in and out. And I have to also recognize that I'm sure there probably isn't a person in this room who's known me longer than the length of this talk whose buttons I may not have pushed and may continue to do so. And, you know, that said, it's sort of like you can be sure that whatever issues you have with people in other places will actually emerge and unfold here at the Zendo over time. It may happen quickly or it may not happen until later, but, you know, it's not some special, well, it is a special place, but it's not separate. Because what is really unique about a sangha is that everybody who stays with it is actually doing their best and is committed to seeing, to listening, and to make space for themselves and for each other. And, you know, we may fail miserably, and we do fail miserably again and again and again. But we keep trying. Because the Dharma teaches us that the reactions are our own, whatever and whoever triggers them. And we are actually the ones ultimately responsible for them. And we're all here to look at that in the safety of the container and the silence. We can actually go through a lot of our very primal dramas to do with jealousy, resentments, fears, longings, desires, anger, inadequacies, basically the whole range of emotions that are at the source of most of our angst. And again, you know, the other person may actually never even need to know it. Although sometimes, and part of our training is to also try to learn how to go there with the other when we need to. As openly as we can, giving each other space to be awkward, to be a jerk, to be an asshole, you know, whatever it is, and to work through it. And probably everybody who's been here longer than 3 years has been on both sides of that paradigm, where you just wish, like, oh my God, did I do that or did I say that? Or, you know, and at the same time, seeing that in others. And it's very humbling and it's very opening. And this is Sangha practice. And I think having a safe place to practice helps us in a way to practice relationship so that hopefully we can do it a little more skillfully with others who are not, you know, committed to doing it in the same way. You know, but ultimately it comes down to do unto others as you would have them do unto you. You know, we arrive, or I certainly did, arrive, I think, with the thought of kind of hiding behind a wall of silence. And I think in some ways I came to the Zendo as a place to escape what I saw as my difficulties and what I didn't like. And the great paradox here is what happens is it actually becomes the doorway to entering them. And, you know, I think this is kind of the miracle of practice is, in a way, it gives us entry into our own suffering and that entry allows us to work to transform it. Because, you know, this mind of Zazen allows the hurting self, which feels so solid and like it's never gonna end, to actually very mysteriously feel not so solid. It's kind of like, I don't know if any of you read Harry Potter or saw the Harry Potter movies, you know, and when they go to, you know, the other dimension, the wizard school, they get on this train. But to get on the train, they actually have to run into this wall. And they have to trust that if they run into the wall sort of opens as they go through it, and they go through the wall, and then they're on the train, and then they, you know, they're on the train. And then, of course, once they get there, there's still a whole host of drama to deal with and whatever. But, you know, they have to trust to just run head on through the wall. And if they get there and they just stop, it's not pretty. So we have to just trust and keep going. You know, but we can't find these walls alone, and we can't go through them alone either. And, you know, I would just add, and I do feel it's important to add that, you know, a lot of times in sitting, there's a lot of things that do come up repeatedly again and again and won't really dissolve, but you're beginning to shed light on them, and there may be whole areas where there's real trauma that stay shut down, and you know that there's something shut down. And, you know, I am a big proponent of therapy, and it's an incredible marriage of ways to really look at the self, because there are some places that we really need very specific guidance as to how to see them, to even see them. We can sense from this practice that there are places to see, but no. None of it is really magic. So I just really want to remind people of kind of just the immeasurable value of the simple, regular, ongoing sitting at the Zendo in the evenings, in the mornings, at noontime. You know, and I don't mean in any way to disparage the talks and the workshops and the events. I think they're incredibly important and very rich, but there is nothing like just the regular, ongoing, quiet sitting. In community, regularly, over time. And there's not many places that really offer that. I just think it's so important now more than ever, really, for the whole world, but for each of us to really, as Roshi says, become intimate with ourselves, to learn how to do that. And we need to be taught again and again and again. It's not a